Welcome to a Weird News Roundup presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. We look into strange tales reported on by Odyssey's radio newsrooms from coast to coast. I'm your Roundup host, Lauren Berry. We're covering a lot of territory in this episode, from the Treaty of Paris to the world's largest truck stop. So buckle up and get ready. Our first stop is at Odyssey Station KMOX in St. Louis, Missouri. That's where the Dave Glover Show team recently discussed a bizarre story in their hometown. The strange question at the center of this story is, why would a veteran firefighter decide to leave his poo in a box? Surveillance footage showed the firefighter in question defecating in a box inside Lambert Airport. He's been placed on administrative leave, according to reports. Here's the Dave Glover Show with more.
I don't understand this story about the firefighter who pooped in a box. Does anyone here understand it?
Well, what's not to understand? I mean, he was in the food service area of the airport.
Are there details and minutiae?
There's a video.
Perfect.
Of what appears to be him holding a box up to his butt and pooping in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not a terribly large box.
Okay.
Well, it was in the food service area.
It looks like it's a Sunkist tuna box. I could be wrong, but I think that's what the box says on the side here.
It's even grosser. Wait, food service area of what?
Yeah, you wanted to make it smell better, am I right? Ugh, yucky. Food service area of the airport. The area that he was pooping in was run by the company that runs all of the like food service kiosks in the airport, which makes it a little more interesting, I think, to the story.
Yeah.
Now, to clarify, it has nothing to do with that company. They have nothing to do with it.
Right.
They are as much victims here as anybody else in this weird happening. So it's not like they were like, hey, you want to do us a favor? Like, they have nothing to do with it. It just happened to be where he did it.
Okay.
And that's about all we know.
Story? Do we know?
Don't know his story.
They haven't identified the firefighter because he has not yet been criminally charged.
Okay.
Yeah,
but authities know who the firefighter are.
I mean, we've seen his picture. Yeah.
He has been with the department since 1995.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. Like, this isn't some like fly-by-night guy that they hired him and then they're like, well, he turned out to be a little weird.
Right.
Like, he's been doing this for 31 years.
You think so?
I mean, like, he's been with the department. I don't know if he's been doing this for 31 years, but he's been with the department for 31 years.
Well, I'm talking about doing that for 31 years because if he's been doing this since 1995, he's like my age-ish.
Mm.
You don't just one day in your late 50s start pooping in boxes.
Yeah. As for a motive, we don't have one.
It in the fridge, is what I understand.
That part I had not
Wait,
heard.
What? Yeah, that's why I understood.
Okay.
Because that's where you put the box.
I haven't seen that anymore.
I haven't heard that either, but I believe it. You know why? Because it makes no sense, and no part of the story makes any sense.
No. I mean, you're in an airport that has how many bathrooms if you need them?
Yeah.
Like, they're literally everywhere, and you're a firefighter, which means you can go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something really bad. It was in Terminal 2.
Is that Southwest?
I don't know. Just. Two.
Oh, gotcha. El Duque.
It's. I don't know why that hit me as funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a funny thing, though.
No.
That has to get you fired, right?
I don't believe he's with the department any longer.
I know he's on leave, I think, but he's been removed from duties. He's on administrative leave, according to the last story.
Yeah.
I know he's going to get his due process. That's fine. I got no issue with that, but that has to be you're fired, right?
I think that's poo process. You know, we've all been there. We've all had to poop at a very inopportune time, and it's probably even worse for a firefighter.
Can be.
But just mess your pants.
Yeah.
Just mess your pants.
Yeah.
And then go where you need to go and unmess your pants.
But for all the things, the solution can't be poop where the food is.
Yeah, not your best
option. I mean, like, if this was in, like, a maintenance closet... And it was just cleaning crap and all. Sorry. Then it's a little, to me, it's barely a story. It's bad, but it's not like, oh, they had to throw away all this food and you may have exposed human beings to things they shouldn't be exposed to.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's like it just hit him and he had to go, because when you think about it, why was he back there?
As St. Louis deals with the mystery of that fireman's
stinky surprise, a treasure trove of priceless documents is preparing to land in Detroit next month. These are part of the Freedom Plane National Tour, and they include George Washington's Oath of Allegiance, the Treaty of Paris, and more. Heather Bruegel, the curator of political and civic engagement at the Henry Ford Museum, joined Ryan Recker of Odyssey's WWJ News Radio in Detroit to discuss the upcoming exhibit.
Oh my gosh, this is almost a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It is extremely exciting that we are welcoming the Freedom Plane and the documents that forged a nation to come here. I mean, we're one of only 8 museums that are hosting these documents over a 3-week period of time. And so it's really cool, and I'm totally excited, and I get to nerd out, and it's great.
So does that mean get to nerd out? So are you one of the first people to see it when it lands and is set up here?
Yeah, I will be one of the first people, yes, to be able to see these documents that are going to be on display here, these documents that helped, you know, create the United States as we know it, and I'm very excited to welcome the public to come and see them.
See, I can tell you're smiling just...
Yeah, I am! How'd you know? I am. I'm totally smiling because it's the opportunity of a lifetime. I remember when the Emancipation Proclamation came through, and I wasn't working here at the time, but I remember coming and waiting in line. I think I waited 6 hours to be able to see this document that is so important to the United States and to who we are as a country.
Some of these documents that are going to be on display, which one are you most excited for?
Oh my gosh, which one am I the most excited for? You know what I think I'm the most excited for? I think I'm actually excited for the Treaty of Paris. The Treaty of Paris document, because that is so significant, because that ends the American Revolution and it officially forms the United States of America. And so I think that is a document that, you know, I mean, it was, you know, ratified in 1783 and it's 2026. So it is a document that has stood the test of time, that is still honored today, and it really sets the foundation for what we have as the United States today. So I think that's probably my one I'm most excited about seeing. I think the second one that I'm probably really excited about seeing is the early Bill of Rights documents.
Well,
so the
neat
foundation set of laws that really, you know, form the United States.
So from what I understand, there's some notes written on it, so you can kind of see what some of the thought patterns were?
Yes, you can absolutely see what people were thinking, you know, and I don't think a lot of people understand that when we had the Constitutional Convention, all those things were supposed to be secret. We weren't supposed to know anything about them, but James Madison, who is known as the father of the Constitution, kept very meticulous notes. And so because of his notes, we were able to see and learn everything that happened during that time period. And so having these Bill of Rights, which is something that he suggested, is really important. And I think it sets the foundation for, you know, these first 10 amendments to the Constitution, why they're important, why we need them. I think that's great, you know, and then obviously there's also going to be an original stone engraving of the Declaration of Independence, which was done in 1823, which was ordered by John Quincy Adams when he was Secretary of State, at the time, son of John Adams, who was the second president of the United States. So there'll be that document here as well, which is also interesting because in the museum itself, we actually have our own copy of original stone engraving. There were about 200 made, and so we actually have we steward a copy of that regularly, and so there'll be another copy that comes with these documents, so you can see it twice if you really want to.
That's so cool. Everything's so
yeah.
Cool. You know, for the process of them coming in, from what I understand, there's like a special plane and there's special guards. I mean, it's very well protected what's going to be coming in here. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So they're going to arrive by plane, which is very different than how, you know, other tours in the past. I think in 1976, you know, there was the train that went across the country that had different things. So these will be arriving by plane. They will be under security. There will be different curators and people from the National Archives who will be accompanying these documents to help us get set up. And then they will be in our care for 3 weeks. We will have security. There will be security around these documents as well, because again, they're very, very old and very, very valuable. So yeah, there's going to be a lot that goes on with these, but we're just so excited to be one of only 8 institutions in the whole country that are going to be able to host these. So we can't wait.
When we come back from a quick break, things get even stranger, with wild stories about unruly chimps, sheep, llamas, and snakes. Then a visit to the world's largest truck stop. Stay tuned for the weirdness on this news roundup presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. Thank you for listening to this special presentation of Weird News from Odyssey's Something Offbeat. With decades of combined animal control experience, Carla Lewis, Paul Atzenweiler, and Jerry Webb of the Leawood Police Department in Kansas have a lot of experiences that seem right out of Ace Ventura Pet Detective. They joined the Dana and Parks show out of Odyssey Station KMBZ in Kansas City to share some of these stories. Paul went first.
What is the craziest thing you've ever had to wrangle for the city or otherwise?
Well, I grew up on a farm, and a lot of my experience with large animal, of course, comes from that. But I got tackled by a chimpanzee once. There was a guy had a chimpanzee off state line, and I stopped to talk to the owner and found myself rolling down the hill with a chimpanzee on my back and thought I was being murdered, but when I got up, the chimpanzee was at the top of the tree laughing at me. But it's actually the same chimpanzee that years and years later, if a lot of people have seen this, there was a chimpanzee loose in Kansas City, Missouri. It was when that chimpanzee was little, like maybe just a few years old.
That busted out of the zoo?
Yeah. Or I don't think it was busted out of the zoo, but it was running loose. The owner, it had gotten loose from the owner. And I think they had actually tried that chimpanzee at the zoo. It just didn't get along with their
animals.
With their chimpanzees. But anyway, it got loose and broke the window out of a cruiser.
Because they'll kill you. But this one was little at the time that it was.
He was little, and yeah, he was like a juvenile, so he was nice. He just made me scared. And then
probably easier than some of the juveniles you guys come across in law enforcement. Jerry, let's go to you. The weirdest thing that you've ever gotten called out to handle.
People will always ask, what's the craziest thing? And we dealt with everything from chipmunks to, at one time we had a wild exotic farm out off 135th Street, and he had buffalo. So the buffalo would get out and horses would get out and run. And that was shortly after I came over here from Prairie Village, is where I started. And that was kind of, I'm the city kid. So that was the new, Paul's the farm guy. And so I was the city kid. So this was all new experiences for me. So a lot of it was on the job learning, that kind of thing. But I guarded llamas, tackled sheep. Yeah. So it's,
one time we were telling that guy, the farmer, he's like, these sheep need to be sheared. So if you don't know it, sheep will continue to grow their wool. And these had not been sheared, and we're like, get them sheared. So he said, I'll get the shearer, but I need some help wrangling them up. So we spent the morning busting these sheep, and we just got our butts kicked. But the guy would shear them and let them go, and we were so glad we did that.
I remember that farm. I know exactly what you're talking about. In fact, my daughter was bit, scratched by a cat there many years ago. I don't think that the animals are there anymore.
No, they're gone.
Carla, if you have one piece of advice, because you guys get called all the time, Operation Wildlife gets called all the time, what is the one call that happens so often where, let's educate the public here, you really do not need to call us?
Yeah, I mean, so many times it's education. And honestly, we enjoy that part of our job. So we enjoy educating our residents and our city. So don't hesitate to call us if you have a question, would be actually my number one thing. Biggest thing is don't interfere with wildlife as much as possible, especially, like we said, the baby animals, the springtime, they're all over the place. And occasionally they do need help, but reach out and get that information. Operation Wildlife has a fantastic website where you can find that information. But for the most part, leave wildlife alone. They do pretty well by themselves without human interference. And, you know, we are happy to give that education. And coexisting with wildlife is the other thing I think all of us really
promote were here first
in our city.
They were here first, right?
And if you have a problem with wildlife, more than likely there's a solution that doesn't include removing them from their home.
Have you been bitten? Carla?
I have not been bitten by a dog. I think the only thing I've actually been bitten by is a snake, probably. But
it's on her bucket list, though. Yes.
I saw one once, and somebody said to me, and it tried to kill me, they said, well, what kind was it? And I go, do you honestly think I stuck around after that thing jumped out of the brush to look and see what shape its eyes were or its head was? Paul, what about you?
I've unfortunately been bitten several times. I've been bitten by a horse. If any horse people know, if you get bit by a horse, it's like being bitten by a large pair of pliers.
Oh, God.
I've been bitten by dogs. I got bit by a bobcat ages ago, a baby bobcat. The mom had been killed, unfortunately, aww, but the traffic guys were keeping an eye out for the babies, and we found it. And when I was capturing it, it bit through my so-called gloves that you couldn't get stuck with a needle. But if you have a baby bobcat at the end of those teeth, it goes right through your finger. And that bobcat ended up being the bobcat at the Topeka Zoo for years.
Oh, got it. Tell me your best snake story, Carla, go.
Oh, man. I think my favorite snake story was a call about a snake in a ceiling. And it was an office building that was probably 98% women. And I walk in and they're like, it's here and it's in the ceiling. And you could hear it slithering over on the drop ceiling.
God.
And everywhere I went, women were screaming. One of them peed her pants. She was so terrified. And so I'm following this snake around, trying to figure out where it's at and like poking the ceiling, trying to get in. And they're like, you're not going to let it down here, am I? I'm like, well, I can't catch it unless it's down here. So I finally get it isolated to a spot and I pop the ceiling out and it shot down out of the ceiling.
Oh,
and we
my
were
gosh.
Able to catch it. So that was, that made
and
me
the
laugh.
Reaction from the crowd?
Oh, I mean, they were.
Running away might seem like a good way to get away from a snake. But hopping on a truck is even faster, if you can find one. And if you do, then you can head to the world's largest truck stop, the Iowa 80. It spans over 220 acres in Walcott, Iowa, and it's described as more of a small city than just a truck stop. Kelly and Bob Phillips of Own the Road with Kelly and Bob out of Odyssey Station KRLD in Dallas recently visited the truck stop for their tour across the country. Let's listen in on their experience.
So welcome to Iowa 80.
This is not a truck stop.
You're right. It's the world's largest truck stop.
Without trucks, we have nothing. There's no medicine in hospitals and clothes on shelves or groceries or anything else that you could possibly want. So if you don't have trucks on the road, you don't have anything. And if you don't have truck drivers in those trucks, we don't have anything.
That's Delia and Lee Meyer, part of the family that built Iowa 80, the world's largest truck stop.
It was Delia's mom and dad that first dreamed of and then created this place that has been described by some as Disneyland for truckers.
And it truly is just that and more. Like any good truck stop on any given day, there are as many non-truckers in this place as there are truckers.
Iowa 80 in eastern Iowa, and not far from the Mississippi River, has just about anything and everything a trucker, or anyone for that matter, could need or want.
And it all started because Delia's mom and dad, Bill and Carolyn Moon, wanted to own their own place.
My parents were living in Kansas City at that time, and my brother was four, and I was just born, and they sold their house and everything they could and borrowed money from their moms and came up here and started the truck stop. My parents were always reinvesting everything they had. They would buy a wrecker or a, you know, new bathrooms or something like that. And so we just kept that up. You know, my dad's been gone since 1992, but that philosophy of reinvesting and making the site great. And the fact of the matter is I have spent my entire life here, literally. So, you know, it's my home. And so when you look around at stuff compared to other places you stop, you'll see, yes, this place feels like home. It's nice. It's new. It's clean. And people are working hard to maintain it. And that's why. It's because this is not only a trucker's home away from home. It's not a traveler's home away from home, but it's my home. You know, I'm welcoming people into my home.
This is our super truck showroom, and we have chrome, we have lights, we have accessories, all sorts of steering wheel extensions, you know, anything you could need for your truck.
T Take a tour of Iowa 80 and you'll soon understand why they call this the world's largest truck stop and just what all that entails.
We've got our fuel islands are over here, along with our truck wash, our truck service center, and then some storage that houses antique trucks. And a water tower. We have our own water systems. Now we get into the third floor. And we've got our 24 faucet showers.
There's the dentist.
Lily?
Yes.
Somebody's over your shoulder getting a haircut. Does that happen here all the time?
Oh yeah, every day. We also have our chiropractor up here in the front office.
They even have a movie theater here. Everything a person who spends his or her life on the road feel right at home.
Thank you all so much for listening to this Weird News Roundup presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to The Dave Glover Show out of KMOX in St. Louis, WWJ News Radio in Detroit, The Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City, and On the Road with Kelly and Bob out of KRLD 1080 in Dallas. You can find all of these programs, including the Something Offbeat podcast, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.